The latest episode of the Next 5 podcast is all about health prevention and vaccines. I speak to Kate Hashey at GSK.
For every dollar invested in improving health, there's an economic return of $2 to $4.
Murray Aitken at IQVIA Institute for Human Data Science.
The benefits of adult vaccination are compelling.
And David Sinclair at the International Longevity Centre.
Preventable conditions amongst those aged 50 to 64 in the UK cost $27 billion a year.
Listen to the full episode of the Next 5 wherever you get your podcasts.
The FT.
Hello and welcome to World Weekly. I'm Gideon Rachman. With Greece in political limbo ahead of a general election on June the 17th and huge questions over the country's continued membership of the euro, this week we're discussing the economic and political future of both Greece and the European Union. What's the most likely election result in Greece? How feasible is it for the country to leave the eurozone? And what are other European nations doing to counter the escalating anti-bailout mood in Athens? Joining me on the line from Athens is the FT's correspondent there, Karen Hope. And here with me in the studio is Chris Giles, the FT's economics editor, and Tony Barber, the FT's Europe editor. Karen, can I start with you? Just give us a sense of what the mood is in Greece amongst the political class and amongst ordinary citizens. Are people in a panic? Are they defiant? How are they approaching this month now ahead of the next elections?
There's no sense of panic, though people are taking some money out of the banks just in case. The politicians are desperate if they're a pro-euro politician and cocky if they're an anti-bailout politician, because they've been increasing their support in the polls and did well in the first election. People are pretty frustrated, feeling very broke. Summer's coming, that's good, but the mood is pretty grim.
You say that the anti-bailout politicians and the Syriza party, which is the one that's getting all the headlines and seems to be ahead in the polls, that they are cocky. But do they really know what might hit them if they actually win? Do they believe that their program of rejecting the bailout but somehow staying in the euro really is realistic?
They say so. They are riding a wave. The economic people are on television saying frightening things, or things that are frightening to business, like we're going to charge you a 1% turnover tax, whether you make profits or losses. We may be thinking about taxing the shipping community, which has never happened before. So they're pushing their line very hard. It's unlikely that they would form a government, but they probably will come first in the election, according to the polls that they are at the moment.
And is there a risk that, to put it bluntly, Greece may descend into chaos before we even get to the poll on June the 17th? You alluded to people taking money out of the bank. Some are portraying this as the beginnings of a full-scale bank run.
It's not looking like a bank run at the moment, and it's probably not going to become one because it's calmed down since the early days of the week. We've got a government now. The election campaign is getting underway. People can take their money out. There's no cap on withdrawals, but they have to order the cash in advance. And the bankers are saying the situation's quite manageable. The campaign will be like a Greek election campaign. Lots of rallies, lots of arguments, lots of debates. That will probably be orderly. There's no sense that any of the parties wants to push it too far.
Right. And Tony, so a mood of calm in Greece, or if not calm, of not of panic, and also of cockiness on the part of the anti-bailout parties. Seen from the rest of Europe, how are the authorities in Brussels, Berlin, Paris, how are they looking at what's going on in Greece?
They are concerned because, whereas in the first couple of months of this year, it seemed as if the European policymakers had bought themselves some time to deal with the crisis in the monetary union as a result of unorthodox measures by the European Central Bank and the installation of a reformist government in Italy and so on. But that sense of having bought time is now disappearing because, quite apart from the turbulent events in Greece, one also sees immense strain on the banking system in Spain, as reflected in the rise in government bond yields this week for Spanish bonds. And one also sees the potential fallout in, for example, Cyprus from the crisis in Greece, not to mention the fact that there is now a newly elected French president, François Hollande, who needs to build a working relationship with Chancellor Merkel in Germany very rapidly. So the European authorities as a whole see fires that need to be put out in several different parts of the Eurozone, and they are determined, I think, to hold the line on Greece, because apart from anything else, they know that any attempted renegotiation of Greece's bailout terms would be firmly resisted by the non-European members of the IMF.
So Tony, let's then jump forward in a month, let's say. Look at the likeliest outcome in Greece. You get a government dominated by parties that say, actually, we're not going to stick to the terms of the memorandum with the IMF and the Commission. What do the Europeans do then? Do they actually pull the plug on Greece and say, OK, no more money? And then what happens?
I doubt that they would do that straight away. If they were to contemplate Greece's departure from the Eurozone, it would be essential to strengthen the wall around the remaining 16 members of the Eurozone, and that hasn't been done yet. So I wouldn't expect an instant letting go of Greece after June the 17th. I think they would want to get themselves a little bit more time to, as I say, erect a stronger firewall around the rest of the monetary, and particularly Spain, I think, is important.
OK, well, Chris, I mean, there are lots of assumptions and guesswork embedded in a lot of our discussions. That one I'd like to explore with you is this assumption that I come across a lot, which is that if Greece defaults or refuses to go along with the memorandum, then it's out of the euro. Now, Syriza say that's not the case. What's your view on it?
Well, I think it would depend very largely on what the European Central Bank actually decided to do. You can't kick a country out of the euro, so Syriza is in one sense correct. But if the European Central Bank refused to finance Greek banks, and if they've defaulted, the European Central Bank is going to be a big loser because they own a lot of Greek government debt. So you could see that the European Central Bank could take a pretty tough line and would refuse to finance the Greek Central Bank, then the Greek banking system does collapse. The Greek banking system is actually temporarily insolvent as it is. So unless they get the next disbursement, which is there to capitalize the Greek banking system, it could fall over.
Okay, if the Greek banking system collapses, does that then mean Greece is out of the euro? What's the next step in the causation?
Okay, so let's just say that happened. The Greek banking system collapses, cash points shut. There is a proper run on Greek banks. People try and get their money out and can't. Well, the Greek economy implodes at that point. You can't run an economy without a banking system. The only way to get money circulating again is essentially to leave the euro. So the most likely Greek exit stories come through the banking system.
Karen, in Athens, do people realise that that's what could happen within months?
The Greeks have got so used to hearing warnings of every kind from European central bankers, from Brussels and Berlin, that they now shrug them off. They seem to feel that nobody gets thrown out of the Eurozone, that if they went, the contagion effect would be disastrous. And so they're sure that somehow the foreigners are going to bail them out, as they have done in the past.
The contagion effect, which Karen refers to, obviously is a big question. Chris, what's your feeling on contagion? Clearly, as Tony said, people are going to try and build big firewalls. They're going to try and isolate Greece if it gets to it. Do you think it'll work?
The only way it can work, the current firewall, which is not even in place yet, the European Stability Mechanism, which is going to be in place in July, so a little bit too late if this happens earlier, on its own is not enough because it's just another sort of lending programme. Countries have to go there, sign memorandums of understanding, all of that. So if we got to a crisis, then you would have to get into new territory. And the only way I could see the contagion sort of fighting mechanism works if you do things which so far are not contemplated. So the European Central Bank and European governments would have to give unlimited guarantees on deposits of other countries' banking systems. Just say, we are socialising the whole banking system. Essentially what they did in 2008 after Lehman's. You'd have to do that across the Eurozone. You'd have to say the ECB would take unlimited action to support the government bond markets of other countries. And almost certainly, as far as the EFSF and the ESM, the two sort of fighting funds, are concerned, you would want to say have a political commitment that Spain, Portugal, Italy had done enough already in terms of austerity, so they pre-qualified to be able to borrow from those facilities, which in effect creates a Eurobond, but de facto, so that they can access bond markets in the period. You'd have to do all these really radical things. And if you did all of these really radical things, yeah, there's a chance that contagion could be limited. If you don't, then it could look really nasty.
So, Tony, that then comes back down to a question of politics. If the German public, and I guess they're key to this, are confronted with being asked to do all these really radical things, which will feel to them like, maybe correctly, Germany underwriting with their own money the whole of Europe, the whole of the European banking system, is it politically imaginable or likely that they'll do it?
There would certainly be much resistance from sections of the German public, and that would be reflected in the attitudes of some in the political establishment. I think particularly in the CSU party in Bavaria, which is part of the ruling coalition. On the other hand, this debate about what exactly is Germany prepared to do in the event of extreme crisis has gone on for the last 12 to 18 months in Germany. And broadly speaking, there is a consensus among Chancellor Merkel's Christian Democrats and the opposition Social Democrats and Greens that Germany should be prepared to act in the last resort in order to be the anchor that keeps the Eurozone together. Of course, that hasn't been costed, so to speak. So the risk that when confronted with an enormous bill, it might not be possible to keep the public behind it is very high. However, I do think that Germany has moved on from, let's say, the summer and autumn of 2010, when there was much more public criticism of the need to help southern European countries.
And finally, Karen, if I can come back to you in Athens, political mood and the interaction between politics and economics, obviously crucial to everybody. And one of the things that people picked up on in the last Greek election and were shocked by was the emergence of radical new parties, the collapse of the centre. We've talked about Syriza, but what about even more extreme parties on the right? How seriously do you take the threat from a quasi-fascist party like Golden Dawn?
Perhaps not a threat, but they're certainly part of life and they'll continue to be so. They will get into the next parliament. The problem is that there are a lot of rundown neighbourhoods in Athens where immigrants have moved in a big way, and where there are violent incidents and muggings of elderly people. And Golden Dawn has stepped in as a kind of grown-up Boy Scout group that looks after people, takes them to the bank to get their pension, walks them home late at night. And if you go around to the police station, the police will give you the Golden Dawn telephone number and say, those are the guys who can help. So they've really cashed in on that. On the other hand, their leader denied the Holocaust this week, and that was roundly condemned by the government spokesman and the other political parties. But they weren't allowed to participate in all the coalition building negotiations. The president made sure of that. But yes, they're a force to be reckoned with, and they're not going to go away.
Okay, Karen, well, on that slightly less than cheering note, thank you for a very interesting discussion to all of you. Thanks to Karen Hope in Athens, to Chris Giles and Tony Barber here in London. World Weekly is produced by Martin Staber. Till next week, if we're all still here, goodbye.
For more downloads, go to ft.com/podcasts.
The latest episode of the Next 5 podcast is all about health prevention and vaccines. I speak to Kate Hashey at GSK.
For every dollar invested in improving health, there's an economic return of $2 to $4.
Murray Aitken at IQVIA Institute for Human Data Science.
The benefits of adult vaccination are compelling.
And David Sinclair at the International Longevity Centre.
Preventable conditions amongst those aged 50 to 64 in the UK cost $27 billion a year.
Listen to the full episode of the Next 5 wherever you get your podcasts.
The latest episode of the Next 5 podcast is out now, and it's all about AI and creativity. I speak to Doug Eck, Senior Research Director at Google DeepMind.
Creativity is part and parcel of humanity.
YouTube creator Danny Vidari.
AI can give us humans new ideas.
And Neil Maiden, Professor of Digital Creativity at City University London.
AI creates a lot of opportunities. I think it's a great leveler.
Listen to the full episode of The Next Five wherever you get your podcasts. Enjoy.